Brandon. I'm headed to Tokyo. The pandemic is going crazy there. The Japanese people do not want us there. They are letting unvaccinated athletes into the country. No fans allowed, no family members. Even some sports, you can't have your coaches there. I just want to have this personal conversation with you before we start the show. If I don't come back, you can have a lot of my stuff.
Sweet. So the guitars and everything like that, I mean, I'm cool with that.
If you take care of them. They're my babies.
I will do my best. I will do
okay. My best. All right. Yeah. Rachel Blount and myself are going to Tokyo. I think we're the only two Minnesota journalists going. I know even Care 11 and NBC affiliate isn't sending anybody. So the storytelling opportunities, the spectacle, the athletes, you know, getting to be in Tokyo. There's so many great things about this trip. I just don't know what the hell's going to happen once we get there. It could be, I mean, we could end up quarantine in our hotel the whole time. We might not be able to talk to people face to face, although we're very hopeful. I don't know. The best thing, Brandon, is that you tell people that you're going to the Olympics and they all go, oh, that's gonna be so much fun. And it's like, it all depends on the country, the buses, the logistics. It's like, you know, I'm glad I did every Olympics I ever did, but like you go to Beijing and like the arenas they built, spectacular, state of the art. You know, you're in Beijing. It should be a cool thing, but you know what? I probably lost 20 pounds that week. There was no place to get decent food with like going outside the demilitarized zone. I told this story in a column I wrote recently, Carlos Gonzalez, my guitarist, but also Star Tribune photographer. We're like, we got to have real food. We're in China. We got to have, you know what? You're in China. You should have some Chinese food, or as they call it in China, food.
Yeah.
So we finally, you know, we go through the whole security thing, you know, people carrying machine guns under the barbed wire, and we go find this restaurant. It looked like a palace. It was just beautiful. And we go in and everything's white linen. Everybody's dressed to the nines. It just looks like a great place. We look terrible, of course, because we're sports people, but we walk in, we get the table, you know, we point at the food we want. It comes out and at first glance, it looked great. Then we realized everything was moving. So we didn't. We ordered a little ice cream and left. So you just never know what you're getting. I'm looking forward to the work. I'm looking forward to representing the Star Tribune and covering Minnesota athletes. I don't know what's going to happen over there.
You also get the distinct honor, though, of being one of like what, two people from Minnesota covering.
Yes. So and that's rare. That's one of the. Yeah, that is a cool thing. You know, I'm very proud that the Star Tribune has this commitment to Olympic sports. Rachel Blount does a great job covering the Olympics. She knows it like nobody else in the state. She's one of the best Olympic writers in the country. I try to do my best when I go over there. And the cool thing is you're going to see some stuff. I mean, careers and money and everything else aside, most of us got into this business to see things you would not have seen had you just been a fan. And you get to see behind the scenes stuff. You get to have conversations nobody else has. And I will tell you, and I've been telling people this week, there are three things I've seen at the Olympics that I will always remember. One is my first Olympics. I'm standing at the bottom of the Alps and I'm literally craning my neck, looking almost straight up in the air so I can watch Lindsey Vonn come down the hill at whatever it is, 60 miles an hour. It's not skiing. It's falling and touching the ice once in a while. It's just, unless you're there and you actually get, you know, the dramatic descent. If you can actually see it with your own eyes, it's hard to explain it. Another one, I'm in Rio, I'm at the mezzanine level, sitting up in the press stands, and Simone Biles starts her run down on the ground on the floor exercise. She, you know, launches herself where she's my eye height. I mean, I'm looking straight across the arena, and Simone Biles is up here. Human beings shouldn't be able to do that. The other one I really remember is being, I think it was Beijing, and watching Usain Bolt come across the finish line and making a sound. It was like he was moving so much air that he actually sounded like a car that's going down the highway. There are things you get to see at the Olympics you just don't get to see, you know, you would not get to see or appreciate unless you're there.
It sounds like an amazing experience. It's kind of with any sport, when you see it on TV, you don't get to see the speed, you don't get to see the height, you don't get to see any amplitude. But not only that, you get to see the best of the best of the best. So yeah, I'm excited for you to at least come away with those cool memories.
Yeah, I'm really excited about it. So I just hope I live.
We all do. I think you'll be fine. I think I'll be fine.
Get
back the after effects of all the stuff you get. That'll be the real question.
Yeah, I sleep for a couple of days. I'm not worried about that part. All right. So to introduce the show, this is Black to Meet with Jim Suhan. He's Brandon Morton, our longtime producer. This is part of TalkNorth.com. You can find this show, the archive of the show, the archives of all of our shows at TalkNorth.com. Best way to listen, subscribe to your favorite podcast app. It is free, and it's the best way to listen. So check out all the shows at the network. We'll keep growing. It's been, you know, we fought like heck to get through the pandemic to keep the business going, and we have, and I'm really proud of our team. So thank you for listening to TalkNorth.com and making this a success. All right, let's get to the 2-minute drill.
All right, let's start the 2-minute drill off with Diva Duo.
Yes, wrote about it last week. Zach Parise and Ryan Suter. I think there was a lot of confusion among casual fans. Why would a team take two of its demonstrably better players and pay them to not play for you? Why would you hurt yourself financially, damage your roster, take experienced players who were good in the playoffs off your roster? And the simple answer, and the answer that a lot of Wild fans don't want to hear, a lot of Minnesota sports fans don't want to hear, is this organization got tired of these guys a long time ago, and this was the right time to part ways. They don't want these guys around their young players. They are turning this team over to Kaprizov, Fiala, Spurgeon, Brodin, Ek, Erickson, et cetera, et cetera. That's what's happening here. And they don't want these two personalities around. It's that simple. I know what a lot of people don't want to hear it. That is the deal.
It seems like the Wild is really trying to prove a point that they're going younger. It's blatantly obvious. So
yeah, well, it's younger. It's a combination of things. It's younger, but it's also not having to kowtow to two big egos. And it's really hard to tell your team and to set the priorities within your team that, hey, this is Kaprizov's team, this is Fiala's team, this is Brodin's team, Spurgeon's team, Erickson Ek's team. Oh yeah, and by the way, we're paying these two guys more than everybody else, and they one of them goes up and tries to get the owner to make roster moves that he likes, and the other one wants to be the dominant personality in the room. It's just real, especially in a sport like hockey. You can do that in baseball, because baseball is, you know, it's a team sport, but it's a series of individual acts within a team framework. Hockey, it's a cohesive sport. It's a sit in a tiny locker room with each other every day sport. You really, as much as I like the theory, and I've even promoted the theory that, hey, you can deal with a bad apple here and there, it's harder to do. And I just don't think Garen doesn't have the patience for it.
It's refreshing. That's all I know.
Yeah, exactly.
Next topic in the 2-minute drills is All-Star Week.
Yeah, I told Cheryl Reeve this. This might have been one of the great All-Star Weeks of all time, because I don't know that we've ever had a week where you had two professional high-level All-Star games where everybody played hard. You know, what we know about All-Star games is you can goof off. You can let the other team dunk on you and go back and dunk on them. You know, nobody plays defense in the NHL game. NFL teams don't really play full defense in that game. Major League Baseball, the defense is invested. The pitchers want to get outs. The fielders want to get outs. Nobody wants to be embarrassed. So if that's why it's the best professional All-Star game. Until you see Team USA play the WNBA All-Stars and they go at it. That was phenomenal basketball. It was back and forth, high-level stuff, creative shot making, but intensity. And the WNBA All-Star team didn't. Everybody on that team feels like they should be on the other team. They're trying to prove a point, and they kind of did.
Once again, the WNBA proving it's one of the most entertaining sports to watch, regardless.
Yes.
Next up, what the hell was that?
What? I said this on Chin Music. By the way, great episode of Chin Music out this week. That's our baseball show with Lavelle E. Neal III and Roy Smalley. And it was just great seeing those guys in person and having the BS session we just had. It was a blast. And I started off that show by saying, what the hell was that? It's an All-Star game. It's Major League Baseball All-Star game, a sport where the uniforms are so integral. The caps, the baseball caps are so integral to the sport, and they have people wearing like pajamas. It just looked awful. It looked classless. The game itself was good, but you know, not only did it look awful, but there are a lot of kind of anonymous All-Stars in Major League Baseball right now. It's really not a national sport. If you're an American League fan, you pay attention to the Twins, you might not know who the Pirates or the Reds are sending to the All-Star game. And you look at those uniforms, you don't know who those – you have to look really carefully. You have to have just the right camera angle to even know they're from Cincinnati or Pittsburgh. Major League Baseball, just so many unforced errors day after day, year after year, decade after decade. I don't know how the sport has survived some of the idiots who run it.
Yeah, it's kind of like I mentioned before. It reminded me of the 90s MTV's Rock and Jock softball.
Yes, game. I love that you brought that up.
With the uniforms, so talking true. To the batters and everything else like that. It just felt like they're trying way too hard to be cool.
I mean, that's, you know, now I can picture MC Hammer and John Bon Jovi captaining the two teams in those uniforms.
That's right. That's right. And Dan Cortez is, yeah.
And David Flav is the second base umpire. Yes.
Exactly. that's funny. Next subject in the 2-minute drill, we've got cruise control.
Yeah, I think the Twins will trade Nelson Cruz. I think they should trade Nelson Cruz. I think Cruz wants to go have a chance to win, and I selfishly hope it doesn't happen. He's just such a classy guy, and he's the one true, healthy, productive, professional hitter this team has. That's what Roy Smalley always reminds us. You're not going to replace Nelson Cruz with anybody else in this organization once he's gone. So I hope after they trade him, they can re-sign him next year. They need his maturity. This is an immature team. They need Nelson Cruz's maturity around.
Moving on, Buck starts here.
So there's a report out, and I haven't really vetted it yet, I admit, that the Twins are offering a long-term deal with Byron Buxton, even though he can't stay on the field with his health. And I know that sounds crazy. Why would you offer big money long-term to somebody who has not proven they can stay healthy? And short answer, two short answers. Number one, you always have to bet on talent. If you don't bet on talent, you're going to end up with a bunch of average players, and average players don't win you anything. They just don't. You have to have people who are demonstrably better than the opponents, who make everyone around them better. Buxton is that guy. It's a risk. It's a risk. It's absolutely. I'm not saying it's not a risk. I'm saying you have to take this kind of risk. Number two, you can't afford, when this fan base, you cannot afford to have Byron Buxton go elsewhere and turn into David Ortiz, only faster. You just can't have. It just can't happen. So if the, you know, listen, people are always bashing the Polites about spending money. There's no better way to spend your money than investing in players you have developed, who you like, who you trust, who have immense talent. And if it backfires, it backfires. But you cannot afford to let this guy go someplace else and become a superstar.
Got to take that risk to get the reward in the line.
Yeah. Yeah.
How's that? Last subject on the 2-minute drills, we've got still the best.
WNBA and the Minnesota Lynx. The Minnesota Lynx lose their first four games of the season. They have two players coming from overseas. One makes it just in time for the first game. Another one misses a couple of games. It takes them a while to get their stuff together. They have to sign. They pick up a point guard off the street that nobody else was signing and put Clarendon right in there to run the team. And as soon as they start figuring it out, they win seven straight and go right toward the top of the standings. You know, Cheryl Reeve is the best operator in town. The Lynx are the best franchise in town. It's just a fact.
There's really no denying that Cheryl is
probably
the greatest female coach of all time.
And of course, if we're going to say that, then, you know, we can probably take another half step and say one of the greatest coaches of all time.
Easily.
And she steps in as general manager. That's a hard job. You know, coaching and general managing are kind of two completely different jobs. She steps in as general manager, and after losing, you know, basically almost her entire roster, there's only one player left over from her championship years, Sylvia Fowles. One player left over. She makes reforms the roster, doesn't ever miss the playoffs, and now has one of the best teams in the WNBA. David Berry said it, you know, as you'll hear David Berry say in the upcoming interview. David Berry, sports analyst, sports economist, friend of Cheryl Reeves, and just a good person to talk to about just about anything. Cheryl's one of the best, and the Lynx, this is one of the best run franchises in professional sports. And if you don't believe us, take it from David Berry. As promised, this week's guest, David Berry, professor of economics at Southern Utah University. You can follow him on Twitter, Wages of Wins. He is a sports analyst as well as a sports economist. I know I know Cheryl Reeve really likes discussing modern analytics with him. So, David, you and I have talked to Cheryl. We've talked with Cheryl about stuff. Cheryl's talked about you, and we will get to some WNBA, women's basketball, equity, all that stuff. But the one thing you and I really haven't talked about when we talk with Cheryl is more the total sports landscape. And you know what? You're the expert on all this stuff. Where do you want to start? Do you want to start with the NBA and how your analytics are predictive in the NBA? Or is there another topic near and dear to your heart you'd like to start with?
We can start with the NBA. We can talk about analyzing basketball if you like.
Well, let's start with this. I know one thing you were saying on Twitter during the season is Timberwolves fans were going crazy about Anthony Edwards is, I know one of your points of emphasis is, hey, you know, points scored is not a great indicator of greatness or even goodness. That, you know, there's a lot more that goes into it. Shooting efficiency is more important. But again, I'm putting words in your mouth. I want to hear your analysis. And if you could apply it to, you know, the Timberwolves predicament.
Okay, so basketball is a tremendously simple sport. It's not a difficult sport to understand. The key to winning in basketball is step one, take the ball away from your opponent before they score. That means you have to rebound and you have to force turnovers. Step two, keep the ball away from your opponent. So that means don't turn the ball over. And if you miss a shot, get the offensive rebound. And step three, put the ball in the actual basket. That's it. So shooting efficiency. So it's rebounds, turnovers, shooting efficiency. That's the game. If you are looking at a player and they don't do any of those things well, they don't shoot efficiently, they don't rebound, they're not great at avoiding turnovers or creating turnovers, that is not a good basketball player. And it makes no difference how many shots they take or how many points they score. If you don't do the things that produce wins, then you are not winning basketball games. And the thing about Anthony Edwards, and it was the same thing with Andrew Wiggins, is on none of the things that matter, he doesn't do any of those things particularly well. So therefore, he can't be thought of as a great basketball player because the things that produce wins, he doesn't do those things. And he also didn't do those things in college. So this was known before they drafted him. He ended up being exactly what you would have thought somebody who had his numbers in college would be in the NBA. He's a guy who takes a lot of shots, and he's not tremendously great at that. He's not horrible at it. He's not tremendously great, but he doesn't do anything else great either. And so that's the issue. And if you build your roster with players like that, you're just not going to win very many basketball games doing that. And the Timberwolves keep doing that for some reason. They don't win. They keep doing the same thing over and over again. So that's why they don't win.
And where your premise hits home with me is I always felt like Kobe Bryant, as beloved as he was one of the more overrated NBA stars of our lifetime because his skill was getting off shots. And he might score 40, but he might take 40 shots to get that 40.
When Kobe was younger, he was, you know, certainly well above average. And so he wasn't Michael Jordan, and he wasn't LeBron James, but he was above average. He was a good shooting guard. As his career progressed, especially after his injury, he just morphed into one of the worst players in the game. He took a lot of shots. He had a streak for a while there at the end of his career where, and I was watching this. I don't know how many games in a row he failed to get to 50% on shooting efficiency, but it was a lot. I mean, it seemed that he defined his game by how many points he scored, and he was going to take as many shots as it took for him to get to that point total.
That was the way exactly what I saw when I watched him play.
Yeah, and missing shots just didn't matter. Those just didn't count. It was, did he score or did he not score? Carmelo Anthony is the same way. Allen Iverson was the same way. Donovan Mitchell does this. And the thing is, again, it's a very simple game. And when I teach this in class and you explain basketball to people, even if you have students who aren't particularly big fans of the game, they're able to understand pretty quickly. Well, that seems pretty obvious that that's what the game is. The game is shooting efficiency, rebounds, and turnovers. That's the game. And then it seems pretty obvious to say, well, then you would evaluate players based on, are you doing those things? And if the answer is no, well, then I don't know how we conclude that you're fantastic at this. Because the thing about the shot, the people who shoot, and this is something that I don't think people realize either, is when Allen Iverson left the Sixers and when Carmelo Anthony left the Nuggets, shot attempts stayed exactly the same for the team. Those shots got reallocated to other players. Players will shoot. And if you have a player who takes 25, 30 shots a game and you take them away, somebody else will take the 25 to 30 shots. And so therefore, in evaluating whether or not they were good with those 25, 30 shots, you should look at, did they shoot efficiently? Were they doing it better than somebody else on the team would have done those shots? And if you look at the shooting efficiency numbers and you say, well, no, they're not any better at that than anybody else on the team is, well, then they can't be your best player. The fact that they get to take 30 shots a game doesn't make them great. Somebody else will take those shots if they're not there.
And one of the long-running philosophies or you know, buzz phrases in the NBA has always been, hey, you know, good players can shoot, great players can get their own shot. Is there value having an explosive athlete who, you know, whether it's end of quarter, end of shot clock, double team, whatever the situation is, can free themselves to get up a reasonable shot? Or is that just come out in the wash with shooting efficiency?
Well, the thing about end of the shot clock, that doesn't happen very often. Yeah. We don't often see teams taking shots at the end of the shot clock. Teams have offenses. They are able to get shots off before the shot clock. When Carmelo Anthony left the Nuggets, one of the things that was odd about when Carmelo Anthony left the Nuggets is that the shooting efficiency of the team actually got better, quite a bit better, actually. And the reason why it got better is because the Nuggets went back to playing basketball the way people knew to play basketball 60 years ago. And it's probably what you were told when you were in high school. We pass the ball around until there's an open shot, and then we take that open shot. That's basketball. That's what you're supposed to do. It is not give the ball to a star player, let the other team collapse on them, and then have them hoist up a shot with three defenders on them and pretend that that's a good idea. That's not a good idea. That's a horrible idea. In the NBA, if there is a defender near you, average shooting efficiency, effective field goal percentage is about 52%. If there is no defender near you, your effective field goal percentage is about 57%. Taking open shots is the way to go. You want to take shots where defenders are not near you, but that requires passing. That requires that you pass the ball around until you find the open person. It is just simply not a good idea to give the ball to somebody who is capable of taking shots with two defenders on them, but you don't want them doing that. That's not a good shot. That's a bad shot. It makes a great highlight. And I think there are basketball players who chase highlights. So what they do is they try to do something spectacular, knowing if it doesn't work, it'll be forgotten. No one's going to remember I just did that. But if it does work, I'll be on ESPN. And so therefore, there's an incentive to do that. There's an incentive to hoist up shots that are really difficult and really ridiculous, because that makes highlights. But it's not good basketball. You don't want your team doing that. This is an interesting thing about Cheryl Reeve and the Minnesota Lynx. If you look at their roster last year in 2020, you look at which players departed. Every single player that departed was below average in shooting efficiency. I mean, this is what Cheryl understands. She understands that if you are an efficient shooter, then you're helping me. And if you're not an efficient shooter, well, you're not helping me. And so that's exactly what you're supposed to do in making personnel decisions. And when you look at the Timberwolves, it's clear they don't do that. Timberwolves are not doing that. Timberwolves are keeping players around who appear to be, you know, the word is athletic. They look like they can get their shot off, but they don't shoot efficiently, and therefore the team loses. And you can't build a team around players who do stuff like that. And you can't build a team around players who don't rebound well and don't focus on turnovers. That's not going to win basketball games. And if you keep going out and acquiring players who do stuff like that, you're going to get the same result over and over again. Because this is another thing to note about basketball players. They are doing the very best they can. Okay, that's, you know, they're not out there intentionally doing bad things. They're playing the way they think is the best way to play. And if you have a player who doesn't shoot efficiently, they're really, I don't know that there's any way a coach can go to them and say, you know, you shoot, you know, 48% and I would like you to shoot 57%. Could you just do that for me? Could you put the ball in the basket more often? They're doing the best they can. 48% is what they can do. And so if you go inquire players who do that, you shouldn't expect them, they're going to suddenly transform themselves and they're going to be a different player than you saw on some other team or in college or something like that. That isn't realistic. You know, the best course of action is go acquire players who've already shown that they can do what you need to do. That's how you build a winning team.
you and I have always talked about basketball is, do you have a favorite, do you have any favorite metrics that apply to the other major sports that, that jump out at you or that might apply to Minnesota teams?
When it comes to basketball is the easiest sport to analyze. It's because it's the simplest sport. People think it's baseball, but when it comes to baseball, hitters are really easy to analyze. But all the other stuff in baseball is really complicated. Pitchers and defense, it's really hard to disentangle them. We have, you know, when it comes to pitchers, we have fielding independent pitching stats. Those are fairly easy to construct and I think provide some evidence of what the pitcher is doing. But it's really hard to disentangle the pitcher from the defenders and what's going on around them. There's a fair amount of luck involved in all these things. So baseball has some holes in how we would analyze it. Football is, if you have a fantasy football team, you should realize that you're just guessing. Football is a mess. One of the things I've done a lot of research on quarterbacks. You can't really predict what a quarterback is going to do based on their college numbers. So the teams that drafted quarterbacks high in this last draft are going to have the same outcome that we saw with other teams that drafted quarterbacks high. Some of them will be good. Some of them will be bad. And there's no way to know which ones are the good ones and the bad ones before you pick them. We don't know. It depends on what players are around the quarterback and what offense the coaches are calling and what defenses they face and the random luck of football. And so when it comes to football and analytics, a lot of it is, I don't know. I don't know the answer. I don't know what you should do. It's interesting to me when people cover football, there is a tremendous amount of certainty before the event. You'll get a lot of very certain predictions. And then often those predictions are totally wrong. And those exact same people come back with more certain predictions, even though they were just wrong. I've told people this before. During the Super Bowl, they do the 9-hour show before the game where pundits are telling us what they think is going to happen. Typically what they think is going to happen isn't what happens in the first half at all. I always thought the halftime show should simply be, let's go through what you said would happen before, what actually did happen, and now you tell us why you're wrong. Why are we listening to you? Because you were totally wrong. None of that happened. What was going on there? And the actual answer is, well, they don't know what's going to happen. We don't know. We don't know.
Well, that's very true. And listen, one of the catches of modern mainstream media is, you know, we are in a place where we have to like fight for eyeballs and viewers and readers, and doing just stuff that's purely logical doesn't always get you there. Sadly.
Oh, no. Yeah. That's the thing. Yeah. It's totally true. Yeah. If you put me on a broadcast, it would be a disaster.
It wouldn't be a disaster. It just would, you know, you wouldn't be Michael Strahan putting somebody in a headlock and saying silly things, which makes millions of people happy for some strange reason.
Oh, it does. It does. Yeah. I wrote an article about this a few years ago. There was a website called Crooked Scoreboard, and they asked me to write something for them. And what I wrote for them is the last person that you want discussing sports with you is somebody who does sports analytics. and the way I wrote the article is I said, imagine you're sitting in a bar and somebody asked the question, who's better, LeBron James or Carmelo Anthony? People in a bar can mull over that question for hours. But the sports analytics person comes in and says, it's LeBron. Can we talk about it? No, it's LeBron.
Yeah, right. There's no debate. No, it's LeBron. Yeah. There's no conversation to be had.
There's no conversation now. We're not going to have a conversation. We can't talk about it. I already know the answer. This is the answer, and now we are done. And you're like, well, what are we supposed to do for the next several hours? Because that was going to be our plan, was to talk about that issue.
Yep.
Well, I'm sorry. You, there's nothing to discuss. There's an answer. That was the answer. And so yeah, having somebody like me on a broadcast, the answer would be it's B, or I don't know, and I'm afraid if I don't know, well, then a good chance you probably don't know either. So I'm not really sure we have a whole lot to discuss now, do we?
And here's where it's like, I've always argued with my editors, okay, you're going to make me predict the final score. I know that I don't know what the final score is going to be. I know I don't know who's going to win. So why are we predicting? Well, people like it. Okay, yeah, but then I know I'm going to get it wrong because I don't have any confidence in my ability to pick games, even if I spend a lot of time breaking down, you know, what I think are the most important numbers. You know, if somebody's going to tip a pass, that's going to change the game, and nobody could have predicted that. And the answer is always, yeah, but people like it. It's like, so we're caught in that, you know, if I'm purely logical, I would never predict anything. But if I go down the road of pure logic, I'm going to piss off everybody I work for.
Yeah, see, that's the thing about sports. So what I do is I use sports numbers in researching human behavior. So that's, you know, that's what I write academic articles about. So I'm looking at issues, gender issues, race issues, how human beings make decisions. So this is an academic pursuit for me, and that's what I do. Sports fans are not interested in that. Sports are an emotional activity. So what's going on with sports is you're not watching the Timberwolves or the Lynx as if you're watching, let's say, a movie or a sitcom. People who are sports fans are emotionally connected to the team in such a way that when the team wins or the team loses, they themselves won the game or lost the game. That's how emotionally connected they are to the outcome. So when England loses yesterday, people in England are emotionally feel like, I'm a loser. I have lost. I feel bad. This has made my life miserable. And people in Italy react, I am now a winner. And in reality, none of you won or lost anything. You weren't playing. You didn't do any of that. That had nothing to do with you. But in their minds, they're emotionally connected to all of this. And so as a sports writer, that's the audience. The audience are these people who've made these emotional connections. And to sit there and write about it purely from an analytical perspective, there's a limited audience for that because most fans aren't connecting with this analytically. They might think they are. They might think what they're doing is I'm providing logical answers to what I'm, but there isn't a lot of logic to this. The one way I tell my students to think about this, because I often make the connection between sports and politics. I think politics and I think religion is also very similar. Trying to get people to change their politics is a lot like going to a Boston Celtics fan and trying to get them to root for the Lakers.
Mm-hmm.
You can't do that. You can't go to somebody who has built up this emotional connection to a team and say, okay, logically, you're rooting for the wrong team here. So you're making a mistake. They don't do that. That's not how people think about this. It's all emotional. So when you think about the analytics, I tell my students after I go through all this with them and I point out that, you know, players like Kobe Bryant or Allen Iverson or Donovan Mitchell are overrated, I have students who go, well, I argued with my roommate about this last night. I'm like, please don't do that. Let people think what they want to think. They can believe whatever they want to believe. You're not going to change their mind. You're just making them unhappy. They want to believe that these people are superstars. Let them believe that. It doesn't hurt anybody. Just
making people unhappy with logic. You just described my job.
Yeah, well, that's, you know, if people want to think Anthony Edwards is the next greatest, then let them think that. That's okay. Now, if you're a general manager with the Timberwolves and you think that, okay, well, then now that's a problem because you're making people unhappy because you're building a team that's not winning very often and you're making them unhappy. So if your objective is to make Timberwolves fans happy, you're going to have to think about this logically. And that's how you're going to have to make decisions. You can't, you know, and I wrote about this in my first book. You can't rely on staring at players to make decisions. And I had somebody in the NBA get very angry that I described it that way. They said, scouts are not staring. I said, I think that's what you're doing. You're just staring at them and hoping that something's going to come to you. And that's not how you make decisions. You got to sit down and you got to look at the numbers. And the reason why you got to look at numbers is this. If you're staring at players, what's going to stand out to you are the extremes. It's Kobe making the shot with two or three defenders on them. Kobe dunking the ball, Kobe doing these things. That's going to stand out to you. What the numbers show you is not the extremes. They show you what's typical. What you're typically going to see from that player is they're going to shoot 48%. And some of those 48% that they make are going to look really great. But at the end of the day, it's still just 48%. And that's the outcome. And if that's the outcome that you're getting, then you're going to lose. And so you got to think about it that way.
You opened the gate to a path that I was thinking about going down. I always tell people in my life that the people who could have predicted the rise of Trump are sports writers. Because when we got to a point where there were comment sections at the bottom of articles and people could email you or attack you on social media because they didn't like something you wrote about their sports team, that whole mentality that this is my team, you know, what became even more obvious than you ever get in. Because, you know, we tend to gravitate in real life toward rational people, and the internet opened us up to irrational people. And I it's like when Trump started rising, a bunch of my sports writer friends and I were like, you know what? It's crazy, right? Here's this failed businessman from New York who's been a racist forever, spray tans his face, dodged the draft five times, just trying to you know, get conservatives on his side. Has never been a conservative. Was a Democrat most of his life. There's nothing here that makes any sense. And I was like, yeah, but we know sports fans. It doesn't have to make sense. It just has to strike the right chord in your heart or your gut or your brain.
Yeah, it's if you look at a player on another team and you're like, I don't like that player. They behave very badly. You know, Dominican Sue, for instance, or Bill Laimbeer or whatever, or Charles Barkley or whatever. And then you put that player on your team. I love that player because I think that player represents me. And so they're my player. And you can sit there and say now, yeah, but you said that player has all these faults, but they're my player now. They're mm-hmm. wearing my clothes. They're on my team. And that's exactly how politics works, is if you go to a partisan and you say, hey, your team has serious problems. They can't see it. It's my team. This is who I'm rooting for. And I'm emotionally connected to my team. And I think we have this idea. Economics has this idea that people are rational and they use cost-benefit analysis to make decisions. And that is, boy, that's not really quite true. I was reading through Angela Duckworth has a book called Grit, and so she's a psychologist, and she was saying one of the ways in which psychologists think about human behavior is instead of thinking about it as in terms of costs and benefits, it's more of people have an image of who they are as a person, and then they proceed to try to become that particular person. And I think that's a better way of thinking about what people are doing, because when you go in and you say, you should look at this analytically. I think a lot of people who don't do that think of analytical people in a negative light. You know, you're a nerd. You're not really in touch with reality. Think about the professor on Gilligan's Island. that's how I think people think about analytical people. It's like, yeah, you have theories and ideas, but in the real world, it doesn't work that way. You don't have any common sense. You're not speaking to the common person. That's what we need. We need people who cut through the crap and just get at the solution, stuff like that. And Trump comes across that way to people, that I'm cutting through the crap. Now, people who think about stuff look at it and go, you're just producing crap. That's nothing you're saying makes any damn sense. But to people who are threatened by analytics, that kind of talk makes them feel more comfortable. And so it's really hard to go back to them and say your team member really is horrible. They don't want to hear that. They don't want to hear that. It's you know, and so it is, politics and sports are really remarkably similar. And this is something I teach history. The founding fathers, several of them, mentioned this when this country was being founded. Because when this country was being founded, the whole idea of people voting on things, that's a pretty new idea. And they warned from their knowledge of English history, in England had just started doing the same type of things. They said, don't form political parties. Whatever you do, don't form a political party. Parties are horrible. People are going to be more loyal to their party than they'll ever be to the country.
Yep.
And I think you see that.
Oh, God, yeah.
very much are like that. They're like, as long as my party wins, even if the country is destroyed, that's okay, because I need my party to win. And you're like, yeah, you need to stop thinking about your party. That's not a good thing. That's a bad thing. And a number of the founding fathers really honestly thought that what would happen is rational people would sit down and discuss issues and come to the solution that was best for the country. They actually thought that. And two founding fathers, Thomas Jefferson and Alexander Hamilton, said, no, I don't think we're doing that. And they both formed political parties, and the rest went the way they wanted to go. It's you know, Jefferson and Hamilton put this together, and people were like, and George Washington and John Adams and other people were like, don't do that, don't form a party. And Jefferson goes, I think I'm doing a party.
Yeah.
We're going to do a party. I want this country to be a certain way. I'm forming a team to get it my way. And then Hamilton formed a party, get it a different way. And that's where we are. And that's been following us for 250 years. And so that's what we have, is we have these, you know, we have people who are now rooting for their team. And you can't go to these people and say, think about what your team is doing. Think about the decisions they're making. Think about whether this makes sense, what is best for the country. They can't do it. It's, I know my team is good. And for them to admit their team is making a mistake is equivalent to them saying, I'm making a mistake. And I don't want to think I'm making a mistake. You know, everyone is a hero in their own mind. So they're like, no, I'm a good person. I must be making the right decision. And you're just distorting all the evidence. And you look at that and you're like, that's utterly insane. Of course I'm not. The evidence is clear. It doesn't make a difference. You just can't, and it is the equivalent of trying to convince a Donovan Mitchell fan that he's inefficient at shooting, even though you can calculate the numbers and say, but look, I'm showing you it's math.
All right, let's wrap up with something a little more hopeful, a little more positive. The Lynx are on a 7-game winning streak. Point guard they picked up off waivers. They had two players show up right as the season was starting. One show up after the season was starting. They start off 0-4, and here they are with the longest current winning streak in professional sports. Analytically, what are you seeing from this team?
The Lynx are clearly a championship contender. So, and we of course knew they had to be, because it's an odd number year, and that's the year
exactly. That's just logic.
That's just logic. I mean, that's numbers. That's just numbers. If you look at the numbers, she wins an odd number of years, and this is an odd number of years. So, the Lynx are, they are an amazingly good team. They have a lot of very productive players. Obviously, Nafisa and Sylvia Fowles are the two key players. But they have other players who are very productive. And I think they are every bit as competitive with any of the other top teams, the Storm and the Aces and the Sun. I think those are the four top teams. I think the Lynx have definitely a very good chance to win another title this year. It's not guaranteed. They're not head and shoulders above the other teams, but there is no team out there that is clearly better than the Lynx. The key is, It's going to come down to, you know, can they hit their shots when it counts? That was the issue early on when they were 0-4. Is it was amazing how bad they were at shooting at the beginning of the season. And I think part of that is probably not having the point guard position firmly established. I think that made a difference. But also, you know, the shooting efficiency in basketball is more consistent than most statistics in baseball from season to season, but relative to rebounds and turnovers, it is the least consistent. So there's more variability in shooting efficiency. Sometimes your shots don't go in. That just happens. And so I think there was some bad luck early on. I'm optimistic here about the Lynx. I think they have a very good chance of winning another title and I don't think people appreciate exactly what Cheryl Reeve has done here. She basically had built up, you know, four title teams. The only thing left over from the last title team is Sylvia Fowles. Mm-hmm. Everyone else is new. She completely rebuilt the entire roster, and here she is back again with another title team. You can't find that in the NBA. I don't have an example of that in the NBA, of a team that won a title and then completely rebuilt their roster and not only never missed the playoffs and came back to being a title contender again.
It doesn't happen. It doesn't happen in any sport.
It doesn't. That's not what happens. And so Cheryl Reeve has done something that other general managers have not been able to do. What you see in other sports is when you look at title teams, look at the Golden State Warriors. The Warriors a couple of years ago were telling us that they had figured out some way to build a title team that other people had not figured out, that they had some analytical genius. Does it look like they have any analytical genius anymore?
Looks like they've just had really good players.
Yes. And it doesn't look like they know which were the good players they had. Right. You know, this happened with the Pistons in 2004. They built a title team. Joe Dumars built a title team around Ben Wallace and Chauncey Billups. And he had this title team in place. And they were phenomenally good for a number of years. And then he traded away Chauncey Billups for Allen Iverson.
Mm-hmm.
And then he let Allen Iverson go after one season as a free agent. You're like, okay, well, maybe you had a plan there. And the players he signed were Ben Gordon and Charlie Villanueva. And then when he does that, you're like, okay, you had no idea why you won. You totally got lucky there. You don't know what players to pick. You're just guessing. And you just happened to guess right. And that's you. The Chicago Bulls were the same way. When Jordan and Pippen and Rodman left, they completely collapsed. Jerry Krause didn't know why they were successful. He was like, I don't know why we won. I'm now going to pick a different collection of players. You're like, but you don't know which ones to pick. No, I don't know which ones to pick. I didn't know which ones to pick the first time. And you're like, So you're all just guessing, right? You don't know which players to pick. You're just guessing. Yes, we're just guessing. And Cheryl Reeve is showing she's not guessing. She knows something that they don't know because yeah, she keeps doing this. Yeah. She keeps and what's amazing to me is the NBA doesn't call her. What really is amazing to me is the Timberwolves don't call her because apparently she's in the same building, isn't she? You can't walk down the hall.
It's right. She's two practice courts away from the entire Timberwolves operation.
I would think the Timberwolves would just wander across the facility and just knock on her door and go, okay, this is hypothetical. I'm just going to toss this out here. Let's imagine just for a moment you were running the T-Wolves for like a day or so. What would you do? How would you do it? Any hints? You want to give us a hint, a clue, what we're doing? You know, you think
the uncomfortable thing would be, well, I'd hire me, you know?
Yeah, exactly. I'd hire me because you clearly don't have any idea what you're doing. It's amazing how the Timberwolves, and this is going to be make Timberwolves fans unhappy to hear this. They are the worst team in professional sports. No team has a lower winning percentage than Timberwolves of any team in any professional sport across time. And the Lynx are the best team in the WNBA, and they're in the same building. It seems odd that you don't just go across the building and just ask the person with the successful team, what are you doing that we're not doing? Because we clearly aren't doing this right.
I will be interested to see if the new owners do have that conversation, because I think they've already started having those conversations with people around the building.
Yeah, well, we'll see. The problem, in my time, I've had conversations with people in the WNBA and people in the NBA, and my experience with people in the NBA is they're not open to new ideas. They're not open to evidence. They already think they know the answer. I remember the very first time I spoke to an NBA executive, and this was 20, 25 years ago. And one of the things this executive said to me is, well, you can't measure a player's heart. And I'm listening to that going, well, you can't either. I mean, what does that mean? Nobody can measure a player's heart. How is that supposed to help you make decisions? I mean, you're supposed to be picking players, and you just picked on something that nobody can actually measure. That's silly. If you're making decisions based on that, well, then I don't know where we're going with this, because it sounds to me like you're guessing.
Well, tell you what, David, I appreciate all the time. Actually, we did not get to some of the subjects I would like to get to eventually. So I'd love to have you back maybe sometime after the Olympics, maybe when the Lynx are heading into the playoffs at some point. Appreciate all the time. I really appreciate your work and your clear-eyed view of the sports world. Any final thoughts for us today?
Yeah, we didn't get to name, image, and likeness. We didn't get the Olympics. We should definitely talk again.
Yeah, well, let's. Yeah, when I get back from the Olympics, let's talk about that, because that's another great topic that's right
there. Are you going to go watch the men's Olympics team?
The men's Olympic basketball team?
Yeah.
I don't know. You know, I feel like if there's not just a clear Timberwolves presence on the men's team, like last in Rio, I spent a lot of time around the men's team because Thibodeau was an assistant coach and I was getting to know him because he'd just become the Timberwolves head coach. I'm not that interested in the men's team unless there's an obvious local angle, and there's not. So I'll spend more time around the women's team. And
I wrote an article for the Freakonomics website. I'll send you a link to this.
Good. Good.
About 9 years ago. And I suspect that the men's team is going to be very disappointed.
Ooh, yeah, I'd like to see
a lot of. There's going to be some sadness.
Well, and that's the other thing is that the only reason I would cover them is if they lose, because you know winning is just not that interesting at this point.
Yeah, well, this is not a particularly well constructed team.
Yeah, I agree with that. Okay, yeah, send me that link. I appreciate it.
Yeah, I will.
Thanks for everything, David. We'll talk to you soon. Thanks to everyone for listening to TalkNorth.com.